There are buildings all across County Wexford with stories still waiting to be told. Homes that were once full of life, now standing empty. Shop fronts with potential sitting idle above them. Farmhouses that have seen generations come and go. But in recent years, something has started to change. Across the county, people are taking on these properties, restoring them, reimagining them, and in many cases, completely transforming them. This is Reviving Wexford, Homes with a Story, a new podcast series from Wexford County Council. In this series, we'll meet the people behind these projects, hear the challenges, the setbacks, the unexpected moments, and what it really takes to bring a property back to life. And along the way, we'll also hear how supports like the Vacant Property Refurbishment Grant are helping to make it possible. Because these aren't just buildings, they're second chances. A building story doesn't always begin with a renovation. Sometimes it begins with a blank page. A property that has been left vacant, a place that has fallen into disrepair, and someone who can see what it could become. For Anne Smith in Gorey, that meant taking on a property from the Derelict Buildings Register and beginning a journey to create a new home from the ground up. But before any work could begin, there was another important step, planning. Understanding the process, navigating the regulations, and working through the decisions needed to turn an idea into a reality. In this episode, we hear Anne's story of starting from scratch, alongside insights from the Wexford County Council Senior Executive Planner Aisling Kenny, as well as Tom Banville and Michael Sweeney on the planning journey, the role of the Derelict Buildings Register, and how properties move from being vacant spaces to opportunities for regeneration. This is a story about vision, planning, and taking the first steps towards bringing a place back to life. Anne's journey shows that bringing a property back to life doesn't always start with construction. Sometimes it starts with an idea, a decision, and understanding the steps needed to make that vision possible. From purchasing a property on the Derelict Buildings Register to navigating the planning process, this story highlights the importance of preparation and having the right information before taking on a project of this scale. Okay.
Okay. Oh, wow, it's really big. So walk me through what we have. Right. Where's your entrance?
Here. Oh, it's front door in Ireland.
Okay.
Which I didn't realise was quite so small, but there you go. This is a office, mm-hmm. sitting room.
Lovely.
Stairs, bathroom, and coats or whatever.
Yeah.
This is the kitchen, diner.
Okay.
Utility room, and then that's gym and.
Oh, I was wondering.
Yeah, that single layer.
Okay.
That wall there.
Okay, yeah.
And this is two story up here. There's okay. Two bedrooms on top.
Very nice.
So they're
very
all
nice.
Dressing rooms. So there's three decent bedrooms
on the top floor then.
Yeah.
Okay, so can you take us back to the beginning then? What made you decide to take the site on? That had already gone through quite a bit of history and there was a few things that was going on. What was behind that decision?
Well, I am from Gorey. I grew up on the avenue just around the corner. So it was 100% location. Mm-hmm. I knew exactly the benefits of the location. And if we think about the 15-minute city, I think this site ticks all the boxes. I'm within 15 minutes walking distance of everything I'd want to get to in Gorey.
And what, in terms of then the grants, what was the planning and the purchase process like dealing with the council? Talk me through those steps and the application and all that kind of thing.
So the purchase was relatively simple. It was an online auction conducted by Sherry Fitzgerald. So that just went through the natural process of an auction. And the grants, we didn't progress with the grant application mainly because we wanted to relocate the house and the site. As you can see, the house, the old house, was very close to the main road, mm-hmm. And we're at the back of the house and we can still hear the traffic. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to relocate the house and take into account aspect, mm-hmm. and capitalise on the southerly and the westerly aspect of the house, which wasn't taken into account before. And practical things like parking a car and getting a car in and out of the house is also so much easier by balancing the house and the site and sort of having an equidistance from the front gate to the front door and from the back door to the back of the house.
Okay, so your episode is different. So a lot of the other episodes, nearly all of the other episodes, focus on grants, but yours is going to be focusing on planning. So we're talking to Aisling, we're talking to Tom Banville as well. So was there ever a time that you were thinking about the planning, and talk to me about what the steps were for the planning and how that all went? Because I'm sure when a lot of people hear planning permission, they kind of panic a bit, because in the last couple of years it's been quite difficult to get planning permission. So talk me through how that went for you.
So that, I would say, was quite a pleasant process for me.
That's nice to hear.
We applied for to rebuild a house on the site, so it wasn't a new planning application on a greenfield site, so I guess that was maybe slightly a little bit easier. The whole process took 7 months. That includes the pre-planning meeting, the planning, and answering the questions after the planning was reviewed. You probably know more about that, Aisling.
Further information request. Okay, I think there was boundary treatments that needed to be clarified through further information, which you came back in the information quite quickly on.
Great.
And then it was determined. So it's great to hear that it was a streamlined process.
It was very streamlined, but I would say that we used RC Design and Robbie McGreevy, who did the design and the planning application. For me. So he knew what needed to be done, and we did simple things like we were very aware that we were in a built-up area, there were other neighbours. I wanted tall rooms, so we have used a steel roof that has a lower dome in it, so that my house isn't going to be towering above everyone else's house. I'll have the same height of total building, but I get the tall rooms inside the house. So if you have an architect that helps you design a house that meets the planning requirements, I have no windows looking onto my neighbours, things like that, I think it makes it easier for planning to come back with a decision that allows a house be a modern house fit into a 1960s area, I guess.
And a built up area as well, which is important. Was there ever a moment that you thought going through the process that it might be too much? I know you've said it was quite straightforward, but was there any hiccups or anything like that?
I have to say no. No, it was. My biggest advice would be to get people who know what they're doing, but that's the same in everything in life, that if you have someone that can advise you that will actually also listen to what you want, that you don't get the architect's house, that you get your house, and that they also know that the area that you're putting the house into and understand the constraints of the area, the constraints of the site, and also the planning regulations. Well, if you marry all of those together, I think that you can come up with a solution that works through planning, and my application proves that, because I got through in 7 months without much.
That was my next question. What was the timeline then, from kind of maybe the start to
7 months? Well, from the planning application was 7 months.
Okay.
And as I said, that included a pre-planning meeting, the planning process, and the further questions.
Perfect. Brilliant. Looking back now, how does it feel to have created something completely new on a site with such a past? Are you delighted?
Well, I think it's great.
Yeah.
I walk around sometimes a little bit nervous and in trepidation. Did I do this right? And is that the right size or whatever? But overall, it's quite exciting.
Brilliant, brilliant. And then finally, you've kind of touched on it there, but what would be one piece of advice that you would give people thinking of doing something like this?
I would say absolutely go for it, but you have to have people that can help you that are experts in the area. And I think it's a privilege to be able to design your own home. So I think it's something I'm very grateful for and glad I got the opportunity to do it.
Brilliant. Okay, Aisling. So can you start by explaining your role then as the Senior Executive Planner and how it connects to projects like vacant and derelict property regeneration?
Yeah, of course. Thanks, Bruna. My name's Aisling. I am SEP in the Wexford County Council, which means that I'm a team leader. So I look after the north of the county, areas such as Gorey, and I have a team of case officers who sit beneath me and make recommendations on files like this project, where it will be replacement of a former derelict dwelling, or potentially it might even be a protected structure that's derelict that is being reused, and potentially maybe even additional residential units in the gardens or the curtilage of the protected structure, or it can even be a change of use of a former derelict structure. There's loads of different ways that you can tackle a derelict structure, and again, it can either be replacement or retention and reuse of the building. So there's lots of ways you can get creative with derelict structures.
From a planning perspective, what are the biggest challenges you see when bringing long-term vacant or derelict sites back into use?
So I definitely have to say it really does depend on the location. Mm-hmm. So urban and rural will bring very different challenges. So if we look at an urban situation, and we start off with, is it in an ACA? Is it a protected structure? And then also, and Anne's touched on it, and it would have been considerations that we would have given for this particular dwelling was overlooking, overshadowing, overbearing, private open space, and access. But as well, it's when it's replacement, it's slightly easier, but when it's renovating and reusing an existing building, building standards have dramatically changed over the years. So trying to retrofit a derelict dwelling into modern day building standards is quite tricky. But then if you look at the rural setting as well, a lot of these were built on potentially small sites. They wouldn't have had modern day septic tanks. Their sight lines may be really constrained. And trying to then rework with that can often be a challenge. But we've seen people do wondrous things and been very creative and working with us to address each of those challenges, which is great.
Brilliant. How important is collaboration between planning, conservation and housing teams in making these regeneration projects work on the ground?
So collaboration in the council is hugely important. We have a wealth of experts in-house which we can draw on all the time, which is fantastic, and it's one of the benefits of working for the council. I will say it does depend on the individual project. So for example, we would draw the housing team in if part five was triggered. So if there was five units or more being created, housing would be drawn in. Conservation, we would draw in if it was a protected structure, architectural conservation area, or if it had vernacular building traits that we thought, for example, it mightn't be a protected structure, but there might be aspects of the design which are very traditional that we'd like reused or retained within whatever's brought forward. So there's lots of different aspects. Or if it's a completely multi-unit regeneration major development, we'll bring everyone in.
Brilliant, brilliant. Just before I ask you the last question, I know there's been a lot of talk about planning changes and planning permission changes over the past couple of months. I know with James Brown coming in as the housing minister, how do you kind of predict things are going to go in the next? Do you think it'll be easier to get planning permission down the line, or are the changes maybe too quick? Or I know they're obviously trying to address the housing crisis, but what from your obviously very expert point of view, what's your kind of take on it?
I think what's coming will be fast, but will be great. So it's all about getting houses up quicker. It's get people in homes quicker, and it's about fast tracking. And for us to be able to do that, we need to revisit the existing act. We need to speed up the processes, streamline it, and make planning easier. So that's probably why there's such radical changes, but those are needed for us to be able to then drive forward at a faster pace.
Brilliant, brilliant. And then finally, what would your advice be? I'm asking everybody this question at the end, kind of just to tie up everything. What would your advice be, someone that's in Anne's situation, someone that's in more of a rural setting? What would be your main piece of advice for them?
So what I would always advise is, before you go too far down the design process, come in, have a chat. You might, and I think you touched on about, there's a misperception at times that planning can be a hurdle or an obstacle. We don't ever want people to think that. We want people to be able to work with us. We'll identify the policies and objectives that they need to have regard to, but and even Anne has touched on it, there's opportunities to be creative and innovative, and you might miss out on those if you don't come into us. You might be in that misperception that people have to stay with a very traditional built form, or they have to leave a dwelling exactly where it is. When we break it down, we might find it's actually a better location if it's set back a tiny bit from the street, and there's an opportunity to bring it back in line with a street line that might have been broken through the former house that was on the property. So again, come in and speak to us really early. We run a free pre-app service. There's absolutely no charge. We do try and get everyone within 4 weeks of submitting their pre-app request. So it's quick. And again, it's an opportunity to identify any big hurdles that might come up further down the line and help you with the design.
And I would say during my pre-planning application process, one of the problems that was identified was the entrance to the site. The old entrance was flat against the street, and that doesn't comply with new planning regulations, which meant that the entrance needed to be moved and become more V-shaped, so when a car pulled in, that it wasn't going to be blocking the road, which then created the problem that the new entrance and the old house were on top of each other. So that sort of cemented the thought process in my head that we have to knock this house and relocate it. I always thought it was going to be better if it was further back off the street, but it sort of made that decision easier that I'd have a much better site if I had able to drive in, park, and it was sort of practical that to be able to access the site.
And you didn't mind then? You didn't mind, like, you had it's your easier. Park set on, like, original walls or anything like that?
I didn't like anything of the old house. So I was perfectly happy to, I think, to get a quarter of an acre so close to the town in Gorey was a stroke of good luck. And to get that, I didn't want to be restricted by the old house position. And it was far easier to be able to start with a blank canvas and build what I want. And as Aisling said, not trying to retain this and build a house around modern living, which is what we wanted.
Anything else that either of you want to say that I haven't asked you?
No, I'm just, again, I would encourage people to come in, get excited about planning. Like, there's lots of opportunities to be creative, and we want to talk you through that process. So there's more ways than ever to reach out to us, either through phone, through email. We can have a Teams meeting online. So there's absolutely no way of having a hurdle between us and them. There's lots of ways. And we can even come to the district offices and facilitate site visits if we need to. So please reach out early in the design process.
Perfect. Tom, from a planning perspective, why is bringing vacant properties back into use so important for towns and villages in Wexford?
So Wexford County Council is really interested in helping people to bring back homes or houses into residential use. And I'm involved in dereliction here in Wexford County Council. And I suppose my role, is to try and support and encourage people to use derelict properties, vacant or derelict properties, and bring them back into use. So nationally, there's a big push, obviously, on housing. There's a housing crisis there at the moment that has been for several years. And the Housing for All strategy that the Department of Housing, is out with at the moment, dereliction and vacancy is a big part of that. They're trying to encourage more people to use vacant and derelict properties and bring them back as homes. We've been, pushing in Wexford County Council to try and support and encourage people to bring back derelict and vacant buildings. One of my roles then, is to manage the derelict site register. And this is a register of properties that are vacant or derelict in the county. And that register has actually tripled in the last 3 years, from 50 properties to just over 150 now. And we'd be looking to try and encourage more people to bring these properties back into residential or other use, commercial use. The Derelict Sites Act from 1990 has a definition, and a very good definition, of what dereliction is. And just to read it out, it says that a derelict site is any land or property that is in such a neglected or ruinous condition that it detracts from the character, appearance, or amenities of the surrounding neighbourhood. And this can include abandoned buildings, dangerous structures, or overgrown land cluttered with waste. So it's quite a wide definition of what a derelict site or derelict property is. So when our inspectors go out and visit properties that come to our attention that are derelict, and it could be in a town or a village or in a rural area, this is the definition that would apply. Is it meeting some or all of the criteria under the definition? If it does, then that property could end up on the Derelict Site Register, and there's a process there that we have to follow according to the Derelict Sites Act to take that property through the process to get it onto the Derelict Site Register. And sometimes property owners will, take notice of the letters we're sending them, and they will bring the property back into use or out of dereliction. If the property owner doesn't, we put them onto the Derelict Site Register. And that means there's actually a potential levy on that property of 7% of the valuation of the property. So every year that property will depreciate in value by 7% of the value of the properties. But it's there to try and encourage property owners to bring their property back into use or to put it on the market.
The term derelict property has been used in this episode as well as previous episodes. So to finish off today, we spoke to Michael Sweeney from the Property Management Unit at Wexford County Council to give us his definition of a derelict property. and to help us understand a little bit more.
The Derelict Sites Act says that a derelict site means any land which detracts or is likely to detract to a material degree from the amenity, character or appearance of land in the neighbourhood of the land in question because of the existence of, on the land in question, of structures which are in ruinous dereliction or dangerous condition or unsightly or objectionable. So in practical terms, just to answer your question, what that means, to get away from the dry legal jargon, it means that a property is generally structurally defective, although it's important to note that if it's deemed dangerous, it's dealt with under different legislation, under dangerous structures legislation. So it would typically have missing broken windows, boarded up, it might be in need of plastering, painting, the fascia and soffits might be in need of attention, missing roof, walls, generally in poor condition, collapsed, might be excessive vegetation or an accumulation of rubbish. So a general appearance of dereliction and disrepair. So as you can see, it can be quite subjective as to what is a derelict site, but it's generally quite obvious when you're looking at a property. And it just, but we do have to be cognizant of the legal definition when we're classifying a property to be derelict. It's important also to note that some people conflate dereliction with vacancy, which are two very different terms. A property can obviously be vacant but not derelict. And there's been some discussion late about the need to update the 1990 Act to broaden and strengthen the definition of what dereliction is, because often you can have some superficial works can bring the property back out of the strict legal definition of what is derelict, but this is often temporary, and ultimately it's an unsatisfactory solution to dereliction. But obviously for the time being we're constrained by the current legal definition. I might also add there's a theory called the broken window theory, and it basically operates around the premise that if there's a broken window and it's left unrepaired, that all the rest of the windows can subsequently become more susceptible to being broken.
Okay.
So that concept is applied to the dereliction program that we're applying to try and address and stop dereliction, to stop antisocial behaviour, vandalism and general appearance of the neighbourhood.
Anne's journey shows that bringing a property back to life doesn't always start with construction. Sometimes it starts with an idea, a decision, and understanding the steps needed to make that vision possible. From purchasing a property on the Derelict Buildings Register to navigating the planning process, this story highlights the importance of preparation and having the right information before taking on a project of this scale. Next week on Back to Life, County Wexford Stories of Derelict Homes, we hear from Seamus Butler in Newbon and his journey of transforming an old family farmhouse into a modern home. A project rooted in history and connection, Seamus shares the challenges, decisions and work involved in bringing a rural property back into use. We'll hear more from Michael Sweeney and Tom Bamville from Wexford County Council as they provide us with all the information we need when it comes to planning, CPO, derelict buildings, as well as grants. Join us next week as we continue exploring the stories behind the homes being brought back to life across Wexford. For more information on planning, vacant properties and the supports and grants available through Wexford County Council, visit www.wexfordcoco.ie.